Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. We're going to be glad you're with me because we've got Rich Galen back on the show. Rich is a political operative of the Republican persuasion. That means he spins to the right, as he often says. He's the publisher, the writer, and the chief accountant over at Mullings.com, a thrice weekly cyber column that I encourage you to check out. And he's our good friend, Rich Galen. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I'm soon to be the physician on staff as well.
Exactly. Well, I feel like I need some smelling sauce there, physician, because of what happened over the weekend. Folks, Rich is the other guy. I don't know who else did, but you and I have the dubious distinction, Rich, of in our writing predicting that we would have a health care bill that would be passed by Congress, signed into law this year.
Yep. I wasn't happy about doing it. And some of my readers, let me just say that I'm correct in those kinds of predictions precisely 50% of the time. So you can't bet.
Well, my record's 750, but you know, that was one of those things where I predicted and then I said, I pray that I'm wrong.
Yeah. I think it goes to a bunch of things. And one of them is, we say this in politics all the time, that elections have consequences. If Republicans hadn't done so poorly in 2006,
absolutely,
and poorly again in 2008, the Democrats simply wouldn't have had the votes to be able to even consider doing what they did on Sunday night, which only passed with three votes to spare, 219 to 212.
Right.
And so if we had just done a little bit better in congressional elections 2 years ago, Nancy Pelosi wouldn't have had the votes. And frankly, she didn't have the votes on Saturday when they kept saying, oh, yeah, when we get to the floor, we'll have them, until the president made his deal with Bart Stupak on the abortion language.
Right.
They didn't have those votes.
Well, you know, and my audience knows that we're equal opportunity dissers here. We reserve our disdain for the political class, not Republicans or Democrats. But, Rich, one of the things I wanted to do I want to get into the politics in a little bit. In the previous segment, I talked about the impact that I thought that this bill was going to have, the official signing of this bill was going to have on the economy for the next year or so. And what I said was, it's going to perpetuate the biggest enemy of job creation that we have right now, and that's uncertainty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because nobody knows, not even the people who signed the bill or who voted for the bill, probably not even the president who's going to sign it today, nobody really knows how this bill is going to be promulgated. Am I correct about that?
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be the new poster child for unintended consequences, and we don't know what those consequences are because we don't know what they are yet. But as they begin to try to formulate the rules and regulations over the next 3 or 4 years, if you're a small business person and you say, well, you know, I could use another person or I could use another two people, and then you say, well, wait a minute, hold on, does that put me over some limit where now I'm going to be liable for another, you know, God knows how many tens of thousands of dollars in expense. You know what? I'll just pay my folks a little bit more, and we'll all just sit here as we are.
Or even if you only employ two or three people, you're trying to come up with a budget for how much this is going to cost you, but you don't know what this is going to add to that budget. That's the uncertainty that makes you not hire that person.
Exactly. I think as a public matter, human beings are so adaptable, we put up with anything. So the fact that the unemployment rate is sitting in the 9% range, and probably will, you know, for the next year or two, that's become the new normal, so we're kind of used to it. It's like gasoline. You know, four years ago, if gasoline would have gone to $3 a gallon, there would have been riots in the street. Now we go, well, it's creeped back up to $3 a gallon. But we get used to it. But to your point is, that it's not a huge news item. Fox isn't leading with it, and MSNBC isn't explaining it, because we've just kind of accepted that part. Now we're looking down the road at, well, what comes next? I mean, where is this money going to come from?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. That's what I'm concerned about, and that's what I worry about for small businesses. And you and I both know, Rich, that the wellspring of recovery, the wellspring of expansion, economic expansion in America, is going to come from Main Street, from small businesses on Main Street. And this is the part, and I'm going to put this back on the president, this is the part that President Obama doesn't understand about America. And if I could sit him down and talk to him, I would say, Mr. Obama, you need to find a way to appeal to our better angels. You need to find a way to give us some confidence. You need to find a way to make us feel that there's some hope for the future if you want this economy to grow and you want to get reelected, for example. Those are some of the things I would tell him. And if he asked me for specifics, I would give those to him. 20 till. We come back after these messages. Rich and I are going to talk about the political aspect of this. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for using it to your advantage. We built it just for you. And if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Rich Galen is our guest, our good friend, former person in charge of the communication shop over at for Newt Gingrich's operation back in the 90s. He's the author of, and the publisher of the thrice weekly cyber column Mullings.com, a political operative by profession. Rich, when I look at what happened, we're talking about the health care bill, folks, and just a little bit on prior to getting it passed, Rich. When I look back on what was done, what was considered, the deeming rule, the deem and pass rule, the slaughter amendment, the reconciliation approach, all of that proved what I've been saying for a long time, and that is that this bill is not about reform as much as it is about power, right, about claiming power. And when I heard those things, Rich, that they actually might pass a bill like this, of this magnitude, without even voting on it, I said, did I go to sleep and wake up in Venezuela? What do you think?
No, I mean, you know, it's the famous
Was that a reasonable response?
Yes, the famous quote that power corrupts in absolute. Power corrupts absolutely by Lord Acton. It's true. I mean, it is. It's not just a theory. It's an absolute, palpable, provable rule. When you have majorities of the size that the Democrats do in the House and the Senate, then the rules are adapted by the overall, corrupted by the majority to suit their purposes and suit their needs. I mean, there's a reason, you know, going, I mean, I didn't know this until I started writing about this whole process, but apparently what was voted on Sunday, more or less, was in the original Social Security package that Roosevelt passed in back in the 30s. And yeah, the reason they pulled that out was because Roosevelt determined that it wouldn't get through the Congress, and they had these enormous majorities then too, the Democrats did. So this has been a long time coming, and I think that when they got this close to within one or two votes, then, you know, or a handful of votes, whatever it was at the end, that the majority decided that corrupting the rules to a good end, in their view, was an acceptable way to go. Yeah.
Right? Machiavelli, the end justifies the means.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I mean. Corrupting the rules to their good end was not only acceptable but laudable. But then they realized I think what happened with the slaughter rule, and it's too complicated to go through here because even I don't understand it. But
which is the same thing, is basically the same thing as the demon pass.
That is the demon pass, same thing. But that it was it would open them to a challenge. And that has been used a number of times in the past, but you know what it's used for? It's things like raising the debt ceiling that really nobody wants to be on the record for.
Right.
And somebody says, let's just demon pass.
Or a highway bill or something like that.
Yeah, nothing like this. And I think the folks who listen in to the cloakroom chatter told me that the Democrats became convinced that that would open it up to a constitutional challenge under Article 1, Section 7.
Right.
And so that they, and besides that, they had the vote. So, I mean, once they realized
they had the president willing to, for example, produce an executive order and get stuck in the other pro-life Democrats on board. But, you know, Rich, let me ask you a question. I don't want to take the Republicans off the hook here.
Mm.
I think, and this is the reason why when they do the polls, it's not just the Democrats who poll low. The Republicans poll low. The political class polls low. I'm not going to say that the Republicans are capable of exactly what the Democrats would do, but I do think there's a lack of fundamental leadership in Washington that is frightening for me as an American. What do you think?
It is a time of diminished statesmanship.
that's a good way to say it. I agree.
And I'm not sure what to do about it. I'm not sure. It may just be a pendulum swing, but the danger to people like you and me, who are virtual. No, we're not. Actually, we have advantages because we have platforms from which we get to speak, and so we do have a huge advantage over most of your listeners and my readers. But for most people, I mean, we have a representative form of government, but that means that our representatives have to do our bidding unless our bidding is illegal or immoral or
right.
And I don't think they're doing it. I think they are, for the most part, the overwhelming members of the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, look no further down the road than their next reelection. And they
speaking
read their
of
local
which,
polls.
Rich, speaking of which, where's this going in December? I mean, in November.
Well, you know, it's a little.
How will this manifest?
Yeah, it's a little bit like astronomers finding planets in other solar systems. They can't actually see the planet, but they can see the planet's effect on that star because of the gravity of the planet. And that's if you look at the way the Democrats acted in this thing. If Democrats thought this was their ticket to re-election, this thing would have passed with 245 votes.
Right.
I mean, it just would have sailed through. The fact that they had so much trouble, and they are so eager not to have to vote again on the reconciliation bill. They don't want any changes coming out of the Senate
because
they don't want to have to put another vote on. That tells me that Democrats, the gravity is that Democrats feel that they are in huge trouble on this thing. And I agree with it. I think they probably are. And I think
the Republicans don't need to feel like it's a fait accompli because I heard somebody say it's a light year between that politically between now and November. A lot can happen.
It can happen, but there are people who will remind the voters about what happened on Sunday.
But never underestimate the ineptitude of the Republican Party to be politicians, though. Which, as you well know, Tintel, quick break, right back with Rich Gaynor. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. Rich Gaynor is our guest, and I hope you'll check out his column, which I enjoy every week, thrice a week, at Mullings.com. And Rich, thank you for the writing you do there. Folks, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, you're going to enjoy what he writes. If you're a Democrat, you're going to want to know what he's up to. Rich, we got it. We're going to have a law. The bill's going to be signed by the president. It probably will go right through the Senate and not have to go back to the House. So it's going to become the law of the land this week, this health care bill. What are the chances that if for example, let's say the Republicans get control of both houses in November, what can they do to fix the bad parts of this bill?
Well, first of all, the bill that was passed on Sunday is the bill. That's done. That is good. That the president's going to sign that instantly the second it gets to the White House. The rest of it, the piece that has to go back to the Senate, was the way that Democrat leaders in the House got, especially people on their left, on the left of their caucus, to agree to this thing. These are the things that the House wanted. The Senate couldn't get through, and so it's effectively amending the underlying bill. But the first bill is going to be signed today, or whenever the president's going to sign.
Right.
Now, in order to undo a bill, you need a new bill. And as we remember from how a bill becomes law, the House and the Senate have to pass identical legislation down to the semicolons. That has to go to the president for his signature. Okay, so in order to repeal this bill, you need a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, because yeah. Obama would simply reject a repeal or
Could that not be overridden, though?
Yes, but you need two-thirds, not just 50%.
Two-thirds.
And that almost never happens. That is very,
right. No,
very
exactly.
Rare.
So I guess the thing, the answer is, if you're looking for a repeal of this, it won't happen in 2011.
It wouldn't happen in 2011.
Or 12.
It couldn't happen. It could not happen before 2013, and that would require, as I said, Republican control of all three.
Of both houses,
both
right.
Houses and
so,
the White
so in the absence of repealing it, could a Republican-controlled Congress modify the bill and take out some of the things that I don't like about it and make it more, for example, the ability to I've forgotten what the Democrats call it. We call it association health plans.
Right. Yeah.
That, those kinds of things. Could they convert those and make those a little more market sensitive?
Sure, they could if they could convince the president to sign it. That's say,
but
the
he'd
same
have to
thing
do
applies.
That. I got you.
The president has to sign
so
any
basically
bill.
What you're saying is whatever he signs into law today
is it.
We're going to have until there's control of other control besides the Democrats of all three houses.
Look at Social Security. I mean, how much did we tinker with Social Security when we had the House, the Senate, and George W. Bush?
Speaking of which, Rich, you and I talked about this off the air earlier, folks. The Social Security and Medicare have obligations. Contingent liabilities of $90 trillion right now. And Rich, I read recently that the $2.9 trillion that Social Security of IOUs in the Social Security Trust Fund that the Congress owes to the Social Security Trust Fund, that's going to be called soon. When we look at all the deficit spending we have, all these entitlements we have, that's exacerbating our deficit spending, et cetera.
Well, I mean,
this bill makes me feel that we've just put on the gas towards bankruptcy, national bankruptcy.
I absolutely agree with you. I said to somebody the other day, we are one failed Treasury auction away from being Greece. I mean, unable to pay our bills. And guess what?
Our one Chinese option that didn't roll over.
Yeah, that's what I mean. One Treasury auction away from being Greece. And there's no, I mean, the EU is bailing out Greece. Who could bail out us? Our economy is twice as big as the next biggest economy, which, depending upon the month, is either Japan or China, twice as big as China. And so there is no backstop for us. I mean, that if you think this thing on Sunday was a major change in the way we do business, wait until, God forbid, that happens.
Right.
The only way to deal with it is for the government to literally own everything. And use
and
that
now,
as collateral.
And now
against,
you understand why
borrow.
I'm telling small business owners to operate frugally, and be prepared. I don't know when it's going to happen, but folks, we've got some things we have to deal with. Mullings.com. Rich Galen is our guest. Rich, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Talk to you next time. Rich will keep us posted in the future as we go through this thing, folks. Sorry to be kind of pessimistic. I just kind of feel that way today. Sorry about that. Maybe tomorrow will be better. Quick break. After the news, I'll be back. I'm Jim Blassing, MC with you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.